Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD or iHeart or wherever you download us from. Thanks very much for doing it. Remember, the B segments are always guessing. We have a great one for you today. One of my favorite subjects to think about when I'm at dinner with friends or just driving around, we actually talk about how autonomous cars will change everything in society. And obviously, I have a great desire for autonomous cars. I'll come back to that in a second. But the guest is Jason Torchinsky, T-O-R-C-H-I-N-S-K-Y. The book is Robot, Take the Wheel. It's a wonderful book which goes over all of the implications of it as well as where we are in its process. So you'll probably see an update on it in a couple of years. And Jason, thanks very much for coming on. I should tell you, when my son got his MD and PhD, we were going to buy him a car. We had bought him a car and we were going to buy him a new car. And he said, no, I'm going to keep my car or use Uber or other things until the autonomous cars come out. He said, you got to buy me one sometime in the first 3 years. Foolishly, I said, okay, not realizing that they would probably cost much more when they came out. I've often thought of them as well. This is a wonderful book. Thanks very much for writing it. Tell us what motivated you to write the book.
Well, there's, for one thing, first, I just want to mention, I don't think you're going to be buying your son an autonomous car for a good number of years, so you have plenty of time to save up, because I don't think they're going to be really ready for quite a while. So don't panic on that. And as far as what motivated me to write the book, I was planning on writing a book about cars prior to 1880, so a very, very different subject. But there was a lot more cars before 1880 than most people realize, and I was interested in that.
I hope you meant 1980, right?
No, 1880. I know Mercedes likes to say they invented the car in 1886, but that is not remotely true. There were a good number of cars around in the 1830s even. All throughout the 1800s, there was more cars than most people realize. So I was going to write about those because they're underappreciated, I think. But in that process of talking to publishers, a publisher came to me and said they what they really wanted was not a book about archaic car history, but more about the future. And because autonomous vehicles have been something that we've been talking about for a while, it's becoming more and more of a subject of interest to a lot of people. So it just seemed like the right time to cut through a lot of the misinformation about autonomous cars and kind of give a picture of not what they're about technically, because I think there is enough information that on that, but more about what it's going to mean kind of culturally and conceptually to have what will really be the first mass deployment of robots in the human society.
Now, let me go in and talk a little bit about my thoughts about cars and why I have thought so much about it, because we use it as a talking subject, and that's why I want your input on this. When I get to take a Uber or whatever for a long period of time, when I'm riding in it, I work in it, and I can work in the back seat of the car. And no one interrupts me. No one disturbs me. It's actually my most productive time in working because I'm there alone. I ask the driver, he can put on whatever radio he wants. It doesn't bother me at all. But I ask him not to talk to me, if you will, if he starts talking to me. And I say, I've got to work because of time. I'm going to be in a car for an hour and a half this afternoon, in fact. So I'm going to, in fact, do that, and it'll be some of my most productive time. So I figure, well, geez, just imagine if I had still was living in the Bay Area. I lived in the Bay Area and was at UCSF for 17 years, and it gradually took longer and longer and longer to get to work. And I would leave if I left it 5:50, I would get there in 23 minutes. But if I left at 6:10, it would take an hour. So I said, imagine if I had an autonomous car, I could really work that entire time, and I wouldn't mind getting up a little later or do things in a little different way. And so it seemed to me that one of the ways it will change us is where you live won't be as important as it is now to work. So when I choose my home now, I made sure it was close enough to work that I didn't have a long commute, because I hate the length of time commutes take. Where am I wrong?
You know, you're not wrong, but I do believe there's a downside to that as well. I think you're absolutely right on the money in that when autonomous cars eventually do come, you will be working in those autonomous cars. You know, the people will absolutely be using that time to be productive. And I think that's a problem, because we are a demand. Like right now, I work from home, and people can get a hold of me on my phone at any time. The chat system we use every day at work, I have on my phone. I'm accessible constantly. There are two times in my life where I can be considered to be relatively free of having to be asked to actually do anything, and that's when I'm using the bathroom or I'm driving. And when autonomous cars come, we're going to be losing that. And I don't think we realize now how important it is to have some time where we're not asked to be productive, where we actually can't be productive. This is an issue because, you know, we're all on call pretty much 24/7 as it is. And soon we're going to be losing that brief period of time where nobody can ask us to do anything. Driving is a very special kind of thing, in that the amount of brain it takes to actually drive is enough that you can't really be asked to accomplish anything. Your hands are occupied, your eyes are occupied, but a good portion of your brain isn't. So you can still do things like listen to music or a podcast or have a conversation with somebody. You can still do a lot of engaging things. You can think in ways, because a lot of driving is a part of our autonomous system. It becomes muscle memory. So there's a reason often people like to go out to drive to clear their heads and get some thinking done and come up with ideas. Because driving, it's just enough of a task to free the rest of your mind to really be open and comfortable to think. When we have autonomous cars, we're not going to have that anymore. Then the time you spend in a car won't be any different than the time you spend at your desk or wherever else you may be working. There is value to being unproductive. And the car has been one of the last bastions letting us remain periodically unproductive. And I think the loss of that, while on paper it sounds great, we can be more productive, we can not waste the time in a commute, I think it's a mistake to be thinking of the time we spend in a commute listening to music or just idly thinking about other things as wasted. I think there's a reason why so many of us enjoy driving, and I think that's a big part of it. And I think the loss of that is almost inevitable with autonomous vehicles, and I think it's something to be mourned.
So what you're thinking of as time that we enjoy in a car, I enjoy, if you will, having a glass of wine with friends and do work in cars now. And in fact, that's one of the problems I have is people call me while I'm on the cell phone and it lights up on the car. And so I have to try and do two things at once, which I hate to try and do because I think driving is a task that requires a lot of attention. Let me go and now talk about your statement. They're not going to be ready for a number of years. Tesla and GM and Volvo and Mercedes and a number of other companies, and you know them, and Waymo, I don't even know how to pronounce the Waymo of the Google
thing,
all have prototypes that are close to being on the road now. Why do you think it's going to take so long for them to, for us to really get them on the road?
Well, okay, let's keep a few things in mind. Nobody has what's known as a level 5 autonomous car now. Level 5 is fully autonomous. The things that Tesla is selling now and GM with their supercruise, like Tesla Autopilot GM Super Cruise, Volvo's driver assist system, Nissan's pilot assist. Those are all what you would call level two autonomous systems, which is basically, it's like driver, very enhanced driver aids, but the driver always has to be ready to take over at any moment. Many of the systems require you to have your hands on the wheel, like Tesla systems, GM systems, monitors where your eyes are being, are tracking. So you really have to be paying any attention. You're almost have to, you have to be ready to drive in a moment's notice. So they are in no way fully autonomous. I know there was a study in last October, a global study, where they found over 70% of people around the world believe you can buy a fully autonomous car now. That is not remotely true. And it's actually a very dangerous idea, because that's why you see people sleeping at the wheel of their Teslas on autopilot. Yes, it'll sort of work on a highway, but if anything goes wrong, and there's many, many things that can, they're going to end up crashed or dead or just in trouble. It's terrible. It's a very bad idea. Semi-autonomy is not autonomy, and it's very deceptive, because when you have a car doing like 80% of the work, it sure as hell feels like it's doing all the driving, but it is very much not. And well, the systems that are being tested...
Yeah, go ahead. That's exactly what I wanted to get to.
Well, the other systems that are being tested in prototype right now by Waymo and all these companies that are doing it are prototypes, and they're not done yet by any means. They are very early prototypes in many ways. They're probably, there's some that are operating at level four or so, something like that. Level four is kind of it's fully autonomous, but within certain constrained environments. And I've been in vehicles like that, and they work well in a controlled circumstance. I was in one where basically they were a fleet of these vehicles in like a retirement community, and they worked well in the context of a low traffic, very understood streets and traffic patterns area. But once we took it out onto a street and tried to go into a traffic circle, the car basically panicked. And that's because the world is chaotic, like deeply chaotic. And to get full level five autonomy is incredibly complicated. It's so difficult to do this stuff. Now, okay, here's an example. And this is what humans are. Yeah, go ahead.
But at least from the press releases, as well as talking to some of the engineers, I understand that Tesla, that Google, or Waymo, GM and Mercedes and even Nissan have all said they're going to have these by 2023 or 2024 that'll be on the road, that'll be fully autonomous. Is that just pie in the sky thinking and talking?
That's wild speculation, and that's PR spin, and there's zero evidence that that's going to be actually the case. They're making progress, and they're amazing. And the amount of progress that's been made recently has been staggeringly good. But as far as real world, level five, meaning fully autonomous, you don't have to think about it. There's so many more complications. And then there's things like weather that they still haven't solved. Like in mud, weather. Remember, these things work on sensors. They have cameras, they have LiDAR sensors and radar sensors. Those things get splashed with mud, they're out of the loop. They don't work anymore. The car's going to have to demand.
One of the points you make in the book, you're going to have to keep your car clean.
Yeah, or the car is going to have to keep itself clean. Like, it's going to need, automatic washing systems for all these things. But as far as, so here's an example of what makes this difficult and why humans are extraordinarily good at driving. And the reason we're so good at it is because of millions of years, maybe thousands of years of human enculturation and understanding how humans work. So, for example, you've driven in a big city like New York, right, with a lot of pedestrian and automotive traffic concurrently, yeah?
I have not driven in New York. I've ridden in New York. Driven in L.A., in Boston.
Okay, I've lived in L.A. for years. L.A. is even different. I'm talking about like a high pedestrian traffic and high foot traffic city. So in New York, here's an example. There's something that happens in New York when you're driving and you're by an intersection and there's people crossing in front of you. The people will continue to cross in front of the car with pretty much impunity. If you want to get through that intersection, there's a process where you kind of inch your car into the scrum of people, and you're driving in such a way that you could potentially hit somebody, but there's an understanding that you're not out there to kill anyone, and nobody wants to get killed, And so people do eventually read what you're doing with your car and get out of your way. But to do that, your car is taking an aggressive action. You're causing it. You're driving it in such a way that if you kept on going, you could hurt somebody. So, but everybody knows you won't really. And that's how it works. That's how you push your way through a crowd of people. How do you program a car to drive with the what looks like the intent of running someone over, but not really meaning it? And how does a car know? And like when you're looking at an intersection, you can see someone on the corner and see like it's a mom with a kid. So you know, okay, I need to be a little more alert because there's a kid there and I understand how kids behave and they can sometimes do irrational things. Or you see someone who just looks kind of nuts and you know you're a little on alert because that person looks like they might do anything or somebody with a cumbersome load might drop something and fall. All of these things we know deeply and instinctively. A car, even the best systems, what they're looking for in their visual systems is they identify people primarily by proportion. You know, they see things that look roughly human-shaped, and they identify them as a pedestrian or a bicycle or something like that. They don't know enough to understand motive that we can read in a human's face or eyes or a hand gesture. You gesture to people like you make that, okay, go ahead, cross in front of me gesture all the time. You look into someone's face, you know they've acknowledged it and are going to go on. How do you do all those things with an autonomous car? There's like so many levels of driving beyond the basics of lane keeping and road holding and understanding what street signs are that are a huge part of what it means to drive. And we're not really there yet. Unless we have a radical change in the behavior of human beings around these cars, it's going to be a while before we can get these things ready to just deal with the chaos that is life on Earth.
And when, if you're speculating, and I guess we can do that, when do you think that'll be done?
I think we'll see more and more semi-autonomy from here on out, and more versions of level 2, maybe edging up into level 3 autonomous systems, you know, in the near future. Like when they're saying like 2023, I think we'll see better level 3 and level maybe even approaching level 4 systems by then. As far as full autonomous level 5, I think we're not going to realistically see that working like where you don't even have to worry about it. Probably until, I bet by 2030-ish we'll see that. And I think even then it will require some infrastructure changes into the way that we handle driving and traffic in order to accommodate the needs of the autonomous cars. And then there's places in the world, like I've driven in India, and the idea of getting an autonomous car to manage through what driving is like in India now, it would take a major change culturally in how they handle driving and behavior on the roads and what's on the road for an autonomous car.
As someone who's ridden in India, I totally agree. India is a totally different if you will, animal. Let me ask you, I want to go into one of the other things you talked about. One of my favorites is where I live, meaning I'll be able to live further away and commute, and you say maybe in 2030. But until then, talk about privacy and how this changes privacy, which you did so well in the book.
Well, that's true. I mean, the idea that you can just drive somewhere and only you know where you're going will be gone, because an autonomous vehicle is going to demand a destination first off when you get in, because that's just how it's going to work. And because the route is going to be planned via GPS and stored in a log somewhere, every trip you take is going to be recorded in some fashion or another. It'll either be stored locally in the car or in a cloud or in a service system. There is no more privacy of travel with an autonomous car, because it's no longer just you. You're not making all the decisions about your travel anymore. You're just telling it where you want to go. And that changes things. If you are doing things and you don't want people to know your paths and where you've been traveling, an autonomous car is not the right choice for you. That's just the nature of how these things are going to work. They're part of an interconnected system. They're not independent. You driving your car, especially an older car, is completely independent of anything. It's just you and gasoline and a motor and you're moving. But an autonomous vehicle is you making a decision where you want to go, telling it to the car talking to any number of computer networks, and that's how that's going to be. And that leaves a data trail that's probably far more significant than you'd realize.
And can someone, do you expect someone pretend to be you, take your car in a cyber heist, if you will, and in fact commit a crime, and you being accused of it where they had impersonated you? Do you see, even while you're asleep, or even if you park in a parking lot, or even if your autonomous car parks in a parking lot, or do you think we won't own our own autonomous cars, we'll just use them?
I think it can go either way. I mean, as far as the cyber heisting thing, pretty much any time you have a computer connected to a network system, there's the potential for being hacked or, you know, something like that happening. So that's always a possibility. And, you know, I suppose it is possible for someone to impersonate you. I don't know if it's any more likely than any number of other possible cyber crimes. But I think it is possible. Now there's ways of, you know, securing it, and of course there's going to be a back and forth between hackers and security, where it just like it is now with any computer system, you're relatively safe until someone figures out how to crack, you know, the security systems, and then you're less safe, and then they figure out how to improve them again. So it'll go back and forth just like anything else will. And as far as owning your own car or sharing one, I think, and it's going to vary a lot depending on where you live, I think high density big cities where car ownership was less common already, you're more likely to share one. In more rural areas or areas with like a more spread out population, I think you're still more likely to possibly own a car because people do a lot more with their cars, you know, when in that situation. They become mobile, you know, storage areas for things. And if you have kids, even more so. I think there's a lot of reasons why people wouldn't want to share a car, even if it's an autonomous vehicle. They still want it personally. And I think we'll see strange mixes in between of like neighborhood owned cars, where they're not entirely just shared, but they're owned by a small group of people. So personal items can still be stored in there and collected and used on a regular basis. I think it's going to be interesting, but I don't believe that it's going to be only shared cars, because I think that's counter to how humans actually work.
We've been talking with Jason Torchinsky, Torchinsky, Robot Take the Wheel, The Road to Autonomous Cars and the Lost Art of Driving. Wonderful book, really explores things about the future and about major robots and the complexity of the road, as you heard. An Automotor's Insider's Edge on Navigating the Future with Driverless Cars. Jason, thank you very much. And thank you, our listeners, for downloading us. Tell your friends about us, rate us, and have fun with the A segments as well, which are the latest medical news of the week and how it affects you. We had a great story about early time-restricted feeding on 949A. Thanks very much, and be well.